Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. This is Scott Spears along with you on this Wednesday, March the 31st, 2021, last day of the month of March, 16 minutes past the hour. And next hour, don't forget, I'm going to tell you about my trip to Philadelphia this past weekend and all the great historic things that I was able to see. But first hour here, we are going to have a conversation with a gentleman I like a whole lot, and there is a big issue facing us in Ohio right now concerning the pandemic and health orders. As many of you know, last week, Senate Bill 22, well, let me try to explain this, give a little background here. Senate Bill 22 would limit the governor's power to issue health orders. Now, the governor vetoed this bill, but the veto was overtaken last week, and now, where do we go from here? Well, a gentleman who might have a lot to say about this is a good friend of this program, the 68th governor of the state of Ohio, Governor Ted Strickland. Governor, how are you?
Well, Scott, good morning to you.
Yes, good to hear from you. It's spring here in Ohio. It's a great time to be in the Midwest.
It absolutely is, it couldn't come at a better time. I mean, we've had a rough year. I think it's time for people to feel like they can get outside and work in the yard, plant flowers, walk in the forest, you know, just enjoy nature and not feel like they're all cooped up in a house.
Absolutely. Governor, I want to talk about this Senate Bill 22. Now, as you read it and you understand it, when it was proposed, what exactly does it mean in regard to the governor and health orders?
Well, it greatly limits the power of the governor to protect the people of Ohio. And I would remind your listeners that the governor is, whoever is in the governor's office, is the person that all Ohioans have voted for. Legislatures have a limited district or area that they represent, but the governor is responsible for the entire state of Ohio. And the governor is, I think, rightly the person who is best positioned to protect the people of our state, whether it's from a natural disaster or a pandemic or any other major threat to public health and safety.
At this particular point, obviously Governor DeWine did not want this. He vetoed the bill, but they overrode his veto. Why do you think in 2021 this has become such a huge issue at this point?
Well, Scott, I'm going to say something that may be offensive to some of your listeners. But, you know, by and large, I think Governor DeWine has done a good job in dealing with this pandemic. But our legislature is an embarrassment. Across the nation, we are an embarrassment. That they are caught up in petty personal arguments and fights. The Republican Party is split down the middle or split in multiple ways. And Mike DeWine is the grown-up in government these days. And so many of the members of the legislature are acting like spoiled children. And to limit the governor's ability to make decisions to protect the people is reprehensible. The governor is in the position to have the greatest amount of knowledge about what's happening across this great, big, diverse state of ours. And the governor has made decisions that I believe has saved human life. And for the legislature to come along and say, we think we know more about what should be done than the governor, how can you get these people to agree on just about anything, let alone how to deal with a major pandemic that has cost thousands of Ohio lives? And so I just think it's a shame. I think it's an indication that our legislature is dysfunctional, and that the only responsible person that seems to be trying to provide leadership within the Republican Party is Mike DeWine.
Now, did you ever thought you would be saying those words?
Well, listen, I'm a Democrat, and I'm going to support a Democrat, whoever our candidate is for governor, because there are many things that I disagree with Mike DeWine about. But I do believe that he is basically a good and decent man, and that he deeply cares about the people of Ohio. And I think that has been reflected in the decisions he has made to try to keep us safe. And so, you know, I want to give the devil his due, so to speak. And, you know, we can talk about things that I disagree with Mike DeWine about, and I'm happy to do that. But when it comes to his handling of the pandemic, I think he's done as well as his Republican colleagues would allow him to do. There's even some things about the pandemic he's done that I would have done differently, but he is constrained by a radical legislature that, quite frankly, is just caught up in their own personal petty issues, and I think are willing to put the people of Ohio at great risk by limiting the ability of the governor, whoever the governor is, to make decisions quickly in order to protect the people.
Governor, there are people in small communities, and they've been saying this pretty much since the beginning of the pandemic, that their businesses have went under or are going under. If you are in the service industry, you still have a lot of limitations based on what you can do, which are hurting your businesses. Buffets in Ohio have all but gone out in most places, even big chains like Golden Corral. And people are getting tired of wearing the masks. Do you think that the legislature is in any way hearing from their constituents and worried that they might not be reelected if they don't do something?
Perhaps. That may be true, Scott. But when it comes to human life, you put human life above your own need to be reelected. And I understand that businesses have been injured. And that's one of the reasons that I was so supportive of the federal effort to bring about needed help to small businesses in this most recently passed $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill. But I would remind you that most, if not all, of the Republicans in the Ohio legislature would have opposed that bill. So on the one hand, they say they're concerned about small businesses, but on the other hand, they're not supportive of efforts to keep them afloat until we get our economy back on track. And Scott, the economy is not going to be fully recovered until this pandemic is under control. There are people who are not going to go to restaurants if they feel like their lives are at risk. And it's wonderful that we've got the vaccines now. And in a few weeks, everyone who wants a vaccine will be able to access that vaccine. And that's the way we get out of this mess. And when it comes to wearing a mask, my God, do we care more about our own need to show our nose and mouth than we do about protecting our neighbors and vulnerable people, older people, people with compromised immune systems? And we feel like it's an infringement upon our freedom to be asked to wear a mask. Scott, what has happened to us that we, so many of us, seem to be so uncaring about how our actions affect others and endanger others? I mean, it's just madness that people would say, "Oh, it's my choice." Well, it's your choice but your choice may be putting other people at risk. And I just think that's reprehensible.
Are you surprised? This pandemic, I want to go through two things here. Are you surprised that the mask-wearing issue has become such a point of contention, not among politicians, even though it has with some, but among people? People are very in one corner or the other on this. There doesn't seem to be any middle ground.
Well, I think if Donald Trump had said early on in this pandemic, we all should wear a mask, and I'm going to wear a mask, that we would not be having this disagreement about mask wearing today. I think it came from the top. He planted the seeds. Early on, he said, I'm not going to wear a mask. I don't want people coming into my office, world leaders, and me wearing a mask. Well, the fact is that most world leaders, responsible ones, do wear masks and encourage the people in their countries to do the same. It has been proven scientifically that when people wear masks, less virus is transmitted and lives are saved. And if that is not convincing enough to cause people to be willing to wear a mask, I don't know what it would take. It's not a matter of personal freedom. My God, you know, we're required to wear seatbelts, aren't we? We're required to do a lot of things in life. It doesn't take away our basic freedoms guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States of America. But to make this a constitutional issue of individual freedom, I think, is just doesn't make sense. It really does not make sense. How many people have been lost today, hundreds of thousands, that may have been saved if we had taken this virus seriously from the beginning, worn masks from the time it became evident that they were effective in preventing the transmission of this virus. How many people, moms and dads and brothers and sisters and neighbors, loved ones, would be alive today if the American people had just said, I'm willing to wear a mask, not only for myself, but because I care about others? How many people would be alive today that have been lost? It ought to trouble the conscience of the country to think about how selfishly so many of our citizens have approached this issue.
With what we know with the bill, Senate Bill 22, with the veto of the governor, with the overriding of the veto of the governor, what do you think we will see from here on out during the rest of this pandemic?
Well, you know, good news is that the good news is that the vaccines are becoming readily available. More and more people are being vaccinated. They just announced this morning that there is a vaccine now that is 100% effective with children in the preteen and teen age group, and so we're going to get through this. But in the meantime, I'm fearful that a lot of people are going to lose their lives unnecessarily because so many people are unwilling for another 2 or 3 weeks to maintain the wearing of their masks and social distancing and doing what's necessary to keep themselves and others safe. We are very close, I think, to the finish line, and it's tragic. You know, think about the last person to die before this virus is totally under control. It's just really sad that people listening, maybe Scott listening to us this morning, will have lost their lives unnecessarily because some people refused to observe good public health practices. It's really sad that that so many people, so many families have suffered so much grief and loss, and some of it could not have been prevented. But I believe much of it could have been prevented if we had just been willing to do simple things like wear a mask. My gosh, that's not a big deal. I mean, it's just something that everybody can do that will protect themselves and others. And we ought to be willing to do it.
What has this pandemic shown us about our society here in Ohio?
Well, I think it's shown us that that like much of the country, Ohio is very diverse and in many ways polarized between the two parties. But as we've been talking this morning, it's obvious that there's polarization within the Republican Party. I mean, there are people who try to act responsibly, Mike DeWine among them. And then there are others that are just almost irrational. I mean, you know, the Republicans running for the Senate, they're comical. I mean, I would think that Jane Timken, who is smart, well-educated, would know better than to say and do some of the things that she's doing in her, the beginning of her campaign. Josh Mandel is just a pathetic, sad person that apparently has no core beliefs at all, but is willing to do anything to try to get elected. It's really quite sad. Now, there are responsible Republicans, and I know them, and I like them, and I spend time with them, and they're reasonable people. But right now, the emerging leadership, when it comes to the Senate, I feel like Mike DeWine's likely to have a primary. These people are just extreme. They're very extreme, and they appeal to the worst of the human being, the worst of human nature, and it's really quite sad. I don't know what's going to happen to the Republican Party. I believe we need a strong two-party system. You know, we need a viable Republican Party and a viable Democratic Party, parties that compete against each other and hold each other accountable. But the Republican Party today in Ohio, I think, is way off base. And then this J.D. Vance, who apparently wants to run for the Senate as well, is someone that I feel like has purposefully used poor people and the people of Appalachia and even his own family to promote his own image. It's just shameful.
When we look at this Senate race that you have spoken about with Mandel in there as one of the Republican primary candidates, and we know you support Tim Ryan at this point from our last conversation, but what have you made of the push to get Dr. Amy Acton in there? Groups pledging money, millions of dollars. She did leave her position with the health organization in Columbus. So what do you make of her right now?
Oh, I think Amy Acton is a wonderful person. I've talked with her. I'm supporting Tim Ryan for the seat, but I have nothing negative to say about Amy Acton. I think she is an honorable person who did her best to serve the state of Ohio, and suffered personally as a result. She endured threats and people with long guns standing on her lawn, and so she went through a lot in order to serve the state and to try to protect people's health. Although I'm very, very strongly supportive of Tim Ryan, I think he is the best candidate for the Senate and has the best chance of winning. You're not going to hear me say anything negative about Amy Acton.
Do you get the impression from your conversations with her that she would like to be in political office or action in any way?
Well, the impression I get is that she wants to serve people. I think that's why she, you know, she became a physician. She's worked in public health, which is not the area of medicine where you're most likely to make the most money. But I think she considers it a calling. You know, Amy came from a very, very impoverished background, incredibly impoverished, and worked hard and got a good education and has served the people of our country and of our state very well.
When we look at that Senate race for Portman's seat, we're a little ways out, but how do you think it's going so far? What have we learned about the Republican and Democratic sides?
Well, it's been pretty quiet, I think. I don't know that any candidate has officially announced yet. I may be wrong about that, but I expect Tim Ryan to announce, you know, within a few weeks. I expect there'll be several Republicans running for the seat. Just let me mention something, if I can, Scott, about this J.D. Vance who wrote Hillbilly Elegy. There's a section in that book where he talks about his mother being a drug addicted and an alcoholic. Now, this guy had already gone to Yale Law School and had a nice home in Cincinnati, was married and making a lot of money. And he said his mother became homeless. And he had promised himself that he would not help her anymore, but she was homeless. And so he said, I found myself kind of being drawn back toward my early Christian teachings. And so I didn't want her to be homeless. So I drove from Cincinnati to somewhere here in Ohio, said 90 miles, to put her in a motel so she wouldn't be homeless. And then he describes the motel in the book. And in the book, he describes a trucker being out in the parking lot with a needle hanging out of his arm. He talks about, you know, the decrepit condition of a motel. He says, and worst of all, were the spiders the size of tarantulas. And you know what I'm thinking, Scott? I'm thinking if I'm a Yale Law School graduate and I've got a big home and making a lot of money, my God, and rather than putting my mother up in a hotel or a motel where there were spiders the size of tarantulas and drug activity in the parking lot, couldn't he have found like a Holiday Inn Express, a little nicer place where he could put his mother? I think that says something about J.D. Vance that people ought to know. And this man now has been pledged, a billionaire, a billionaire has pledged $10 billion in order to help J.D. Vance run for the Senate if he were to choose to do that. What an example of the very rich trying to buy a Senate seat. That is reprehensible. It ought to make, regardless if a person is a conservative, a Trumpster, or a socialist, that ought to make all of us really angry that a billionaire can give $10 million to try to help buy a Senate seat in the great state of Ohio. It's just reprehensible. It's just unthinkable. And it's an example of the corruption that exists within our campaign finance system. Mm.
Governor, I want to go back to Governor DeWine here for a second, because last week our Lieutenant Governor, John Husted, had a little bit of problem with a comment that he made, and I want to go through this so people understand what happened. Governor Mike DeWine defended a tweet sent by Lieutenant Governor John Husted on Friday that offended many in the Asian American and Pacific Islander community. Lieutenant Governor Husted shared an article about former Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Robert Redfield telling CNN he believes the coronavirus originated in a lab in Wuhan, China, despite having no evidence. In the tweet from his personal verified account, Husted wrote, and this is a quote, "So it appears it was the Wuhan virus after all." DeWine responded by saying Husted's tweet was about the Chinese government, not its people. This was the quote. "There is no prejudice there at all. He was not saying that in that sense. Again, I think we need to make a distinction of the government and the people of China," DeWine said on Monday. "The government of China is one thing. We love the people, but we can still be critical of the government of China without being prejudiced," said DeWine. First of all, what did you make of the tweet from Lieutenant Governor Husted?
Scott, I know John Husted very well. I used to sit in my office when I was governor with him nearly every week around a round table and talk about policy. So I know him very well. He's a very smart guy. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he was doing it to try to curry favor with right-wingers. That's what he was doing. It was reprehensible, and I understand, you know, the governor is loyal to him and tried to cover for him. But what John Husted did would contribute, I believe, to the anti-Asian violence that's taking place in this country today. And he should apologize. He knew better. And, you know, I'm not surprised that Governor DeWine tried to, you know, soften the impact of what he said and to give him some cover. But John Husted knew exactly what he was doing. He knew exactly what the effect would be. And he ought to apologize to the people of the Asian American community as well as all Ohioans. It was a terrible thing that he did, and I believe he knew better.
Do you consider that tweet to be prejudice against the people of China and not the government, as the governor said?
I think that tweet was a tweet that contributed, or very well may have contributed, to the hostility and the anger that is being directed toward Asian Americans, our fellow citizens of Asian American descent. We just saw yesterday that 65-year-old woman in New York City that was pushed to the ground and kicked in the head three times by a man who said, "You don't belong here." And what John Husted did with that reference to the Wuhan virus contributes to that kind of anger and animosity toward the Asian American community. He should not have done it, and he should apologize to the Asian American community, as I've said, but to all Ohioans. We do not need a lieutenant governor representing us in that kind of way.
You know, Governor, even if he was currying favor by saying that remark, and you say he's a smart guy, at some point, as I sit here, I would know that if I tweeted out that term, that there might be some repercussion, not just from politics, from political people, but also from a community, which is seemingly what happened here. How do you think that got by him?
I don't know. I can't understand what was in his mind or what was in his heart when he did that. But I do know that a lot of Republican politicians are falling all over themselves to try to curry favor with the most extreme elements within their party. And my guess would be that that's why he did it. I don't know for sure, but having done it, if he had just said, you know, "It was a mistake, I'm terribly sorry, I should not have done that," then I think it would have been over with. But he, you know, he doubled down and defended what he had said, and, you know, even got the governor to defend him. And he ought to be ashamed of himself.
Governor DeWine in this situation did not have to defend him. He did not have to issue that remark. He didn't have to say anything. Are you surprised that the governor came to his aid?
Hello?
Yeah, are you there, Governor?
Yeah, I thought I lost you for a minute, Scott.
Yeah. Yeah, what I was saying was the governor did come to his aid, Governor DeWine. He did try to paper it up a little bit. Are you surprised that the governor came to his aid? He could have just said nothing.
Well, you know, it's the DeWine Houston administration, and when the lieutenant governor makes a statement or stakes out a position, I think it can reflect upon not only himself but upon the governor as well. So, I guess I'm not surprised that the governor, you know, made a statement and that he tried to be supportive of what the lieutenant governor had said. Because, you know, in a sense, they're a team, and what one says obviously reflects upon the other.
When you look at politics today, how has it changed since you last ran for office in 2016? Not that long ago, but 5 years ago. Has it changed a whole lot, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's changed a whole lot in the last 10 years, but changed dramatically in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, when I was governor, my first budget passed with the House and the Senate being controlled by the Republicans, and there was only one dissenting vote. When I was governor, as I said, nearly every week, I met in the governor's office, was sitting around a round table with the Speaker of the House and the Leader of the Senate. Most of that time, those individuals were Republicans, and we would spend an hour or 2 hours or more if necessary talking about issues and working out problems. I don't think that's happening today. I mean, Mike DeWine can't even get that kind of cooperation with his own party. And so things have changed, I think, unfortunately. It's really sad because government has become dysfunctional in so many ways. I think people are rightly frustrated and dissatisfied because the issues that get the attention tend to be issues that are divisive and polarizing and really don't affect the lives of most average citizens.
You know, Governor, there was a report recently that Josh Mandel... Oh, are you still there, Governor?
I am,
yeah. There was a report recently that Josh Mandel and a lot of other candidates across this country went to Florida, and they called it an audition, had to audition for Donald Trump to even think about running for these offices. Can you imagine something like that happening, and what do you make of that?
You know, it's sad. It is really sad, is it not? That people would feel like they had to have the blessing of Donald Trump, you know, in order to run for political office in Ohio. It's really sad. I mean, this man was basically a failure as a president. Hundreds of thousands of people died as a result of this pandemic that could have lived if Donald Trump had just taken responsible leadership in dealing with this virus. And, you know, I believe he incited the insurrection that caused the invasion of the Capitol building, and the officer being killed and others being terribly injured. And, I mean, why would they want this man's approval in order to run for political office in Ohio? Donald Trump, by his actions, not by his words, because he's a good salesman, but by his actions, he has shown that he doesn't give a damn about ordinary people. He doesn't. He uses them. He pretends to care deeply, but there's nothing that he has done that has really benefited the people that he claims to care about. They want to take away health care from people. so many people, Scott, look up to him, but he is not deserving of their admiration. And for people to go to Mar-a-Lago, where he's living in a life of luxury, and try to get his blessing to run for a Senate seat in Ohio, I think is just, I don't know, it's just frustrating to me.
You know, Governor, it's interesting because however you feel about Donald Trump's policy, former President Trump's policies, it is interesting. He did win Ohio by a pretty fair margin in the last election. He did win Florida in the last election, presidential. And here we are in late March. The election was in November. I was driving in Pennsylvania this past weekend, in Hershey, Pennsylvania, a state that Biden eventually did win. He won it by a narrow margin, but he did win Pennsylvania. And I'm driving through Hershey, Pennsylvania, and there is a Trump 2020 flag on somebody's porch and a cardboard cutout of Donald Trump. And you can see these flags if I drive through Marion, Ohio here. I can see these flags. What is it about the man? At some point, he had something that appealed to people and still appeals to people to a very large margin.
You know, he is very good at what he does. And I think what he does is manipulate people for his own benefit. But he's very good at it. And he talks a good game, but he is in my judgment, a person who does not tell the truth. He tried to subvert our democracy. I mean, what is more treacherous than trying to overturn an election that you lost? And so I admit there are a lot of people. I've got neighbors on both sides of me here in my little condo complex that are supportive or were supportive of Donald Trump. So I understand that there are people out there who really believe that he he's not a politician, that he wants to shake things up, that he wants to drain the swamp. My God, how many of his close associates and friends have left in disgrace and been indicted, and some of them in jail. He didn't drain the swamp. he talks a good game. Really talks a good game. But if you look at what he actually does, it's all for his own benefit. And I think people will come to realize that. My personal feeling is that he could very well end up in serious legal problems and even at some point be incarcerated because of the accusations regarding financial malfeasance even before he became president in New York and other places. So there's still a lot of water to go over the bridge, so to speak. The final chapter on what's going to happen to Donald Trump has yet to be written. But in my judgment, 4 years from now, he will be either a non-entity or he will be someone that people will try to avoid.
We are going to have a race for governor here in Ohio next year. Is there anybody on the Democratic side who you have talked to or have seen who you think would be a viable candidate should they decide to do that?
Well, there are two people who have indicated they're going to run. They haven't officially announced yet. And I've talked to both of them. In fact, I talked to Mayor Nan Whaley, the mayor of Dayton, just a couple of days ago. And I think she will certainly run. And if she does, I think she'll be a very strong candidate. She's gotten a lot of national press. And in the past has had a very good working relationship with Mike DeWine, with Governor DeWine. But I think she is determined to run, and I think she'll announce rather soon. And the other person that has indicated that they're going to run is the mayor of Cincinnati, Mayor Cranley. And he's done an excellent job as mayor of Cincinnati and has a lot of support. So I think we'll have a strong candidate for governor. And I know that Governor DeWine is popular with many Democrats, but it wouldn't surprise me if Governor DeWine doesn't lose a primary, because he has lots of problems within his own party, as indicated by that veto override. So it's going to be interesting over the next couple of years. And I'm happy not to be personally involved in a campaign, but I do have friends that I want to help, and I certainly want to help Tim Ryan, because I think he'll be a great senator.
Is there anybody who has made it aware that they would like to run for governor who you would like to throw your support behind at this point?
Well, the two people I mentioned are friends of mine, and they're both very good, strong candidates. And so what I have told them is that at this point I'm going to remain neutral. But I wish them both well. And there may be others that will come forward, but those are the two that I know of at the moment.
I would think that if Governor DeWine does face a primary in the Republican Party, I would think the Republican Party would have to say that we can't just run anybody against a sitting governor if we do not like our current governor. Do you think possibly this is why, because I've heard this is why Jim Jordan, our congressman in this district, decided not to run for that Senate seat?
I think Jim Jordan didn't run for the Senate seat because he knows that he cannot win a race in Ohio. But the person that I hear referred to most often is Mr. Renacci. And I don't know if he'll run for governor in the primary or not. Jim Jordan may. But I think Jim Jordan is too extreme for even many of the people who may have supported Donald Trump.
Do you think that Governor DeWine at this point would have trouble getting reelected? If the election were held tomorrow, I asked you this a couple months ago, and you said you thought if the election were held tomorrow, he'd be reelected. After this House bill and after how his party obviously feels about some of the things he's done, and now knowing a little bit more about some of what's going on the Democratic side, do you think if the election were held tomorrow, he'd be reelected?
Probably, but we are a long way from that decision being made. Scott, just let me say to you that when I was governor at the same stage that Mike DeWine is in his governorship, I was hugely popular. and I ended up losing my reelection, not by a lot, but by a little over 70,000 votes, but I lost. So things can change very quickly. And I think it's absolutely impossible at this time to know how popular Mike DeWine may be, or how unpopular he may be, or how badly he may be beaten up in a primary, and also the strength of what I think will be a very strong Democratic challenger. So perhaps right now he would win re-election, but I don't think that says much at all about what's going to happen when it comes time for the people of Ohio to make that choice.
In the final analysis here, with Senate Bill 22, which is going to limit the governor's powers when it comes to health orders, with Governor DeWine vetoing that and then his veto being overturned last week, if you were governor, what would you do at this point? Is there anything he can do besides sit there and watch what's going to happen now?
Well, I think he can go to the people, and if there's anything that I would really criticize him about, in terms of his dealing with his own legislature, is that I think he ought to go to the people, and you know, the people of this state need to know that his ability to protect them has been diminished. And not only his ability, but any future governor's ability. And that's a serious thing because, you know, a pandemic can occur and decisions need to be made quickly. And when you get the legislature, first of all, many of them know nothing about health care or science, or many of them don't even seem to believe in science. And you get a group of people trying to make decisions about the health care needs and how to protect the people from a pandemic or other major environmental disaster. It can result in a gridlock, and that gridlock in certain circumstances can result in loss of life. And so, yes, if I were Mike DeWine, I'd be going to the people of this state and calling out the Neanderthals that make up the Republican legislature. So many of them tend to be anti-science. They're just, I don't know. They're some of them, I think just are inadequate to be representatives of the people.
Governor Strickland, before we part ways with 30 seconds left to go, we talked about Lieutenant Governor Husted's comment about however people see it, about the virus and the Chinese government or the Chinese people, however people see it. A lot of people felt that he should not stay in that position for making that remark. Do you feel he should step down?
No, I don't think it was that, I don't think it was that kind of egregious mistake or behavior. I think he ought to be called out. And my personal feeling is I think he ought to apologize. And I think if he were to apologize, that would be sufficient. To recognize or to acknowledge that what he tweeted out was inappropriate and could contribute to the hostile environment that exists in this country now toward Asian Americans. But I think it would be I would not suggest that he should have to resign over that tweet.
The 68th governor of the state of Ohio, Ted Strickland. Governor Strickland, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
And Scott, I wish you and all of your listeners a good day. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Governor
1071.com. And keep an eye out for the WWGH News Chopper flying high overhead. We here at WGH Radio 107.1 FM